Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Robert Grillo, author of the new book, Farm to Fable. That's a little later on the show, but first some news.
From One Green Planet, there are a few concerns that always seem to pop into people's heads when it comes to eating more plant-based foods. First and foremost is the question of whether or not you can get enough protein with just plants, which is a valid concern considering that protein is an essential nutrient that helps facilitate many bodily functions. Luckily, it's easy enough to get enough protein, even when meat and dairy are out of the picture. Nowadays, you can find high-protein plant-based burgers in the frozen aisle of your grocery store, but if that isn't your thing, then there are plenty of whole food, plant-based sources of protein. The second concern is often whether or not you can stay full without meat. Well, a recent study by the University of Copenhagen revealed that if you're hungry, you might want to forget the hamburger and go for a veggie burger made from beans. How? In the study, a sample of 43 men were given three different breakfast meals on three different days, with each meal occurring 2 weeks apart. Each breakfast included a protein patty with a mashed vegetable on the side. The first combination was a high-protein meat patty and potato mash. The second was a high-protein legume-based patty paired with a split pea mash. And the third was a legume patty with a lower protein content than the other patties, with a split pea and potato mash. Surprisingly, a majority of the men reported that they felt fuller for longer after eating the high-protein legume patty. But this isn't just all talk. The study also revealed that participants consumed 12 to 13% fewer calories for lunch when they had the high-protein legume patty versus when they consumed the high-protein meat patty or the low-protein legume patty. To break it down even further, both the high-protein meat patty and the high-protein legume patty boasted the same amount of protein. The legume-based patty had a whopping 25 grams of fiber per 100 grams, compared to the 6 grams of fiber per 100 grams in the meat patty. Fiber, when combined with food that has a high protein content, which is abundant in plant-based foods like beans and legumes, but not so much in meat, was likely the reason the test subjects stayed full for so long. Considering all the other issues associated with eating meat, such as greenhouse gas emissions, deforestation associated with cattle grazing, antibiotics and hormones fed to livestock, all on top of the animal welfare concerns, there are so many reasons it might be time to consider eating more plant-based foods. So next time you're feeling hungry, you might want to go for that lentil burger instead.
The nonprofit group, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, is calling on the U.S. Department of Agriculture to require a warning label on packages of bacon, ham, hot dogs, and other processed meat and poultry products to inform consumers that eating those foods is associated with an increased risk of cancer of the colon and rectum. A petition filed on December the 1st by the Center for Science and the Public Interest cites the findings of the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which concluded in 2015 that processed meat is carcinogenic. Eating 50 grams per day of processed meat raises one's risk of colorectal cancer by about 18%. A typical serving of ham, sausage, bologna, or hot dog weighs about 55 grams, which is about 2 ounces. Cancer of the colon is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States. The American Cancer Society urges consumers to minimize consumption of processed meats, such as bacon, sausage, luncheon meats, and hot dogs. The center's petition says USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service has the authority to require the labels under the Federal Meat Inspection Act. To protect the public's health, USDA is obligated to require the industry to inform consumers about the risk of consuming processed meats. The center is asking for labels of all meat and poultry products preserved by smoking, curing, salting, and/or the addition of chemical preservatives to bear this following message: USDA warning, frequent consumption of processed meat products may increase your risk of developing cancer of the colon and rectum. To protect your health, limit consumption of such products.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that a new systematic review of dietary patterns and sustainability, published in the latest edition of Advances in Nutrition, provides additional evidence that diets lower in animal-based foods and higher in plant-based foods are better for the health of people and the planet. The review highlights the urgency of addressing sustainability in national food policy as a matter of food security. Long-term food security can be ensured only if we consider the sustainability of our food supply now. The review was conducted by Miriam Nilsson, a leading expert on nutrition and sustainability and director of the Sustainability Institute of the University of New Hampshire, along with colleagues on or associated with the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. It identifies 8 more studies that support the health and environmental benefits of sustainable diets, on top of the 15 studies included in the committee's original systemic review, strengthening the conclusions of the committee's report even further. Stephanie Felsenstein, Population and Sustainability Director at the Center for Biological Diversity, states that the evidence is overwhelmingly pointing to one clear solution. We need to eat less meat and dairy, and a growing body of research shows that we can't afford to wait for national food policies that help educate Americans on sustainable diets and ensure that healthy, nutritious food is widely available and affordable. Sustainability concerns and the recommendations to eat less meat and more plant-based foods were not included in the final 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, following intense pressure from the livestock industry. This omission came despite the strong evidence presented by the Guidelines Committee, along with widespread support from environmental, public health, and animal protection organizations and experts, as well as an unprecedented 29,000 public comments. The Center's Felsenstein concludes that the collective health of our environment, the American people, and our food system is at stake, and that it's time for our elected officials to stop letting special interests dictate policies that determine how informed Americans make food choices. We need our leaders to create policies in the interest of a healthy, sustainable, and secure food system. Of course, going completely plant-based rather than just cutting back on meat and dairy in our diets would produce many more health and environmental benefits and show compassion to our fellow animals.
Coming up on today's show, we have a conversation with Robert Grillo. He's the founder and director of Free From Harm and the author of a new book, Farm to Fable, The Fictions of Our Animal-Consuming Culture. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Robert Grillo. Thanks for being with us, Robert.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Robert, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in animal issues?
Sure, yeah. Well, back in 2009 was when I first started becoming aware of the issues of animal agriculture, and I was just so struck by how horrible it all was. And so, aside from just wanting to make changes for myself and changing my diet and life, I also felt very compelled to become an activist and to become more involved for the sake of animals who have no voice and, literally no meaningful protection. So that's when I started Free From Harm. And it started as a web presence because my background is in marketing and digital marketing. So it just seemed like a way for me to leverage my skills that I had been developing over the years and apply it to, a cause that I cared about.
Right.
Yeah, and your Free From Harm webpage is beautifully designed.
Well, thank you. That's our new and improved site we just launched about a month and a half ago. So lots of improvements there.
Well, we should talk a little bit about Free From Harm. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. So our main focus is online activism and kind of encouraging people, on the one hand, encouraging activists to become more involved and more active. And it's really amazing because we have kind of a global community of like-minded people. We just got a donation yesterday from someone we didn't know in France. And we thought, what a wonderful thing that is to live in an age when, you have followers and a community that is just global, and we can all kind of rally around something that we believe in and share our thoughts and inspire each other. And so We have that, and then we also have lots of resources for just the general public, and we look at ways to kind of get their attention and get them thinking about the issues.
That's great. I can say we've never gotten a donation at ACT Radio from France, so congrats on that.
Yeah.
Right.
And like you said, there's just tons of resources on the webpage, from everything from Why Be Vegan to addressing our most common justifications for people that still continue to eat animals. And that's one area that, you know, we really see in people that we interact with that aren't vegan or vegetarian yet. They always come up with, well, yeah, you're like that, but, you know, I have these canine teeth, so, you know, I have to eat meat. So I think it's really important to highlight these sayings that people come up with, that they are justifications and they're ways of getting around dealing with what you're actually doing, which is causing a lot of animal harm and suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that was one of my motivations for writing the book, was because that I felt like there's kind of an absence of attention on in our movement. There's an absence of attention on the beliefs that, you know, fuel the animal consuming culture that we live in, and the focus is more on behavior and behavior change, like, you know, Meatless Monday being a classic example. It's an appeal to, you know, diet and to making a certain kind of incremental baby step kind of change, but it doesn't really address the underlying values or beliefs for why we even consume animals in an age when most of us could easily make other choices. So that was kind of the motivation behind the book.
But it does sort of get one's foot in the door, the Meatless Monday idea. I think it introduces people to the concept that you could get by for a day or two without meat, and maybe they'll explore it further. Of course, it's not as motivational as many other tactics that we sometimes use, but it's something. And I think it's probably led a lot of people to consider a plant-based diet.
Yeah, it seems to let people have their guard down a little bit if they can think, oh, it's just something I do one day a week, and then hopefully dive in more to think about, okay, why is it that more people are actually doing this full-time? And why are they, you know, but you're right, there are other potential avenues for better advocacy. I guess when you first took the plunge, I'm curious, were there any justifications that came to mind for you when you were thinking about changing your diet? I know, you know, I had an argument, or not an argument, but a discussion with my brother, and I was like, well, you know, what's going to happen to all the cows, you know, if we stop eating them? You know, and now I'm just like, that was such a silly question because, you know, obviously we're producing these cows so that we can eat them. But, you know, I know that was one of the silly ones that stuck out in my mind. Do you remember having any of those, or were you probably more advanced than I was in your thought process?
No, I distinctly remember, like, seeing the movie Food, Inc. and being
seeing
really
the
traumatized.
Food
the
Inc.
movie Food, Inc.
Oh.
Food, Inc., yeah.
And just being really traumatized by what I saw. And I thought, okay, you know, I'll just go for the humane certified kinds of products. And the next day I went to Chipotle and I had a chicken burrito and, you know, saw the signage about how their chickens are free-range and all that. And then, you know, it only took me about a week to kind of see through that lie.
Good.
that humane washing is really and that's, I devote a chapter of humane washing in my book to talk about some key figures behind that movement and why it's problematic. Because it really is, I think, the fiction or the fictional device that we, you know, as people who see through this will be challenged with, because I think it's animal agriculture's way of kind of intercepting the discussion away from plant-based eating or veganism.
Sure.
And to retain those kinds of customers to think that they can still consume animal products and do it with a clear conscience.
I know. I always remember a story about that with this friend of mine I had. She was talking about how they only ate, you know, like humanely raised lamb and she was going on about what a wonderful pasture the lamb lived in and how it had this beautiful, you know, home, and it was frolicking out eating grass or whatever and being very well cared for it. And then I said to her, yeah, right up until they slaughter it. And then she just looked at me like horrified, you know. And, you know, it's true. People wrap themselves in those ideas so they don't have to face what actually is going to happen to that animal in the end.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, too, I don't think many people really consider the actual betrayal aspect of that. When you think about, okay, when you think about the two, let's just say two stereotypical scenarios. The first one is like a totally desensitized industrial farm worker working in some kind of large farm, doesn't know the animals. They're just, you know, they're all faceless. They're all the same. And so treats them in a very callous, you know, desensitized way. That worker is in, you know, in kind of a huge facility. But then, you know, the opposite situation, like the one we're talking about with the lamb, is somebody who actually claims to care about those animals in their care and has and names them and actually has every intention of betraying that trust that the animals gain from them taking good care of them. And then so in the end is going to completely betray and deceive them. And for what? I mean, for what benefit? For making a living off of their lives or because for a satisfactory, you know, like a fleeting satisfaction, a forgettable meal. And when you think about it in that terms, I think a lot of people, when they consider the betrayal aspect of it, it's pretty tragic.
Right. And I really liked in your book and going back to Liz's point about how really, you know, farmed animals are killed in adolescence or early adulthood. And you know, I think that's another one of the common beliefs that are incorrect in our society about how, oh, well, you know, people have a farm and then they have animals and then they live great lives. And then just at the very end, right when they're about to die of a heart attack, then we take them to the slaughterhouse or they have, it's just totally absurd because it's not worth it for them to keep raising these animals after they reach a size for slaughter. And I think, you know, and I just, I don't know, I, that one definitely resonated with me.
We're eating babies, is mm-hmm. what people don't realize.
I think that's a point that can't be overemphasized. You know, we don't hear it very often, but most people have no idea that they're eating a 6-week-old baby chicken or a 16-week-old baby turkey or, you know, months-old piglet. And yet these are, you know, this is like, you know, I think it was Tom said that, you know, farms have no... They would never keep animals longer than they needed to in order to bring them to market weight because it would be cost prohibitive.
Well, they had a good life and is one of the many myths that are mm-hmm. perpetrated by animal agriculture. But the marketing gimmicks that the producers use, like free range and humanely raised, there are no standards for that. It's just a way to ease people's conscience about it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a certain segment of our movement that buys into these same fictions that the industry, you know, the humane watching fictions that the industry is using and champions these campaigns as well. But my feeling is, as their advocates, I mean, who are we to really negotiate the use of their bodies?
Yeah,
I don't really think that's our role, but you know, that's my personal.
Well, you know, belief. I would never campaign for bigger cages, for example. But when there is a campaign for getting pigs out of gestation crates or something similar, it at least brings an awareness to the public that animals are kept in conditions like this.
It does, but I also think, you know, we could use that same leverage to actually make have a bigger vision of what we want to see, the kind of change that we want to see in the world. So,
can fight for that, but the public is only willing to take incremental small steps, you know, away from meat. Like, you know, they'll go for the bigger cages, but they, you know, won't go for giving it all up right away. At least that's my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah. That's interesting because when you listen to social change leaders in other areas, like, are you guys familiar with Becky Bond? She was kind of one of Bernie Sanders' chief strategists during his campaign.
Okay.
And the research that they did found that people don't want to invest a lot of time and energy and thought into making small changes. They're only going to really invest and make a commitment to something, if it's a big change, that they can be, that they can, the world can be promised a big change.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of interesting evidence there too that I think we should look at, because I mean, I think it's very popular today, and it's very popular that the foot in the door, what they call the foot in the door approach, where we ask for baby steps, is more effective. But actually, in my book, I did a fair amount of research comparing that foot in the door approach with the opposite, which is called the door in the face approach, where you ask for more than you ask for more than you think that someone's going to commit to. And then you negotiate back from there and say, well, okay, if you won't do that, then how about this? And so that approach is apparently as effective, or one is not more effective than the other.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably further evidence, too, in the desire for big change, and the fact that, you know, President-elect Trump is going to be going into office. There's plenty of proof in that. But, you know, I think that ties back into the fact that you're, you know, you talk in your book about how, you know, people, we don't want to feel bad about what we're doing. And so I guess that's a concern, is if you say, okay, we are going to make your cage for, you know, instead of the size of a piece of paper, it's going to be a piece of
paper. Sheets.
Yeah, it's going to be two sheets or a legal size note. And then people, you know, then it makes it okay for people to continue doing what they're doing. And so, I guess that's certainly the other concern, is that, you know, as you talk about in your book, about getting people to feel comfortable, because we don't want to feel like we're doing the wrong thing. I mean, we don't want to do that with our food. We don't want to do it with how we, you know, go about our jobs and how we treat our families and our faith and all those sorts of things. And so,
I have a feeling that there's two effective ways of making change. One is to introduce people to the live animals, and the other is to share vegan food with them and show them how good it tastes. Those are the two approaches that I think are effective.
Well, I don't know, because I think a lot of people, too, are very concerned about climate change right now, too. So I think, other than the president-elect, but I mean, a lot of people that live along coastal areas and people that are farmers and people that are seeing how our climate is changing, I think that's an opening, too, that people are starting to really connect with, too. I wouldn't play that down so much.
Right. And I think on that climate change subject, that is where I think making a case for baby steps would fly in the face of the evidence,
right,
and the urgency
that
climate scientists and environmental scientists are urging us to say that, hey, baby steps aren't enough at this point. We need to make significant changes. And there's a couple of different approaches. One is, of course, you know, renewable energy and infrastructure, and investing billions of dollars in that. And then the other is looking really seriously at our food choices, and having governments and societies take responsibility for the impact that their food choices are having. And that doesn't cost anything. That would be one that we could actually act on now and not have to invest billions of dollars in. So, you know, we just have to, I think part of it is that we have to be honest with our audience and say, hey, you know what, if you want to do Mondays or Tuesdays, that's great. That's your choice. But you know what, I have to be honest with you, it's never going to be enough.
Right.
That we actually need more significant change than that. So look at the research, do your own research. Here's some sources for you, and, you know, go to town on it, because you're going to find that it's a lot more serious than some of these organizations are telling you.
Yeah. Well, we've known about climate change for decades, and look how little we've done. And most people don't even realize the impact of our diets on climate change. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a disaster.
Yeah. I think that was well said on your part. It says, you know, the impact is now for the pig that's in the factory farm, for the coyote or the wolf that's being killed because the ranchers are trying to protect their livestock, for the polar bear that's, you know,
starving
to death, or, you know, can't swim anymore because there's no more ice. You know, because people, and then also for us, for our health, it's, you know, you could have many of us, you know, could have a heart attack at any moment. So really the impact is now, and it's critical that we do something right away.
Yeah, and it's incredible that we can just, you know, the change can be easily made. You know, one of the things I warn against in the book is let's not frame this as a difficult life change.
True.
Because if you look at going plant-based or going vegan compared to all the other, you know, some very difficult things that could happen in your life, like losing a loved one or going through a divorce or getting a terminal illness or something like that, you're never going to look back on this decision and this change in your life as having been difficult to that extent. So we should make it, I think it's a lot easier than some people in our movement, you know, claim it is for people. And we should encourage it and say, hey, it's not as difficult as you think.
Yeah, I agree 100%, especially nowadays with all the alternatives available. And then everybody, you know, even if they don't want to buy a bunch of processed alternatives, there's so much access to fruits and vegetables and grains. And I mean, it's not like people are lacking for, you know, food in our country, at least most people. I'm sure that's not true
Absolutely.
Everywhere.
Yeah, and I was just watching an interesting documentary about Ethiopia. I think it was in The Guardian's YouTube channel, and they were talking about how industrial agriculture, you know, or, you know, other countries have set up shop there, and they've thrown people off of their land, and they're growing grains and grain crops to feed animals, and these grains are being exported. They're not, you know, it's one of the hungriest countries in the world.
And they're exporting grain. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And, and Western countries are going in there and taking over their land and resources and creating, you know, producing grain so that animals can be fed.
Yeah, that's really, really sad.
Really terrible situation.
Yeah. We've been talking with Robert Grillo, the founder and director of Free From Harm. And you can access that at freefromharm.org. He's also the author of the new book, Farm to Fable, The Fictions of Our Animal-Consuming Culture. Thanks so much for being with us on the show, Robert.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thanks Robert.
Very inspiring.
Okay.
Very inspiring.
Thank you.
Thanks.
As the holiday season approaches, you might consider doing some vegan shopping this year. There are plenty of places on the web where you can find wonderful vegan products like Vegan Cuts, Pangea, Mooshoes, FakeMeats.com, or just Google vegan shopping and the list will astound you.
If you'd like to learn more about plant-based eating, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org. VSEP has many events ranging from cooking classes to restaurant hoppers to dinners with speakers to dinners and a movie. You'll be astonished at how many things VSEP does each month.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows at Back Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.